Italy votes on a constitutional referendum to slim down its parliament. The political battle over nominating a new Supreme Court justice in the United States begins. The UK's top scientific advisers address the nation over coronavirus as the government fails to be clear. And what is the power of the political endorsement? Monocle's editors tackle those topics today on the late edition here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the late edition. I'm Carlotta Ribello. Joining me today here at Studio One at Midori House in London are Monocle's culture editor Chiara Rimella and Monocle 24 senior producer and presenter Marcus Hippi. Chiara and Marcus, welcome both back to the programme. How do I find you today? The beginning of a new week. Is it a busy one ahead for you on the magazine, Chiara, or not really?
Has there ever been a non-busy week on the magazine? No, it's an exciting time. We're putting together our November issue at the moment, which I've got to say, at least in the culture section, echoes a lot of the topics that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be analysing the sway and influence that media, particularly in the US, can have on election results. So I think we'll definitely get stuck in that debate a little bit later on.
How about you, Marcus?
Well, it's always obviously busy on the radio side as well, but I'm lucky enough to be able to say that I'm going to be on a holiday from next week onwards. So it's always something when you've got something to look forward to, you feel like you get an extra boost of energy.
Especially this year, I feel like the prospect of even if it's a long weekend somewhere just gives us that little bit of energy, as you are describing, to carry on with the week. Well, we need to put you at work then, Marcus, while we still have you. Thank you both again for joining us. Let's begin today's late edition in Italy, where people have been voting on a constitutional referendum to slim down parliament. Chiara, as our resident Italian, can you tell us what this is all about and why does it matter?
Well, and this is a discussion that's been going on for quite a few years in Italy with regards to the cutting down, the slimming down of the numbers of MPs in both chambers of parliament in Italy. The reasoning behind this is an ambition to cut down the costs of politics. But obviously, it has transformed a little bit into a bit of a populist, battle over the course of the years, where the Movement 5 Stars, which was a party that was born essentially with the ambition to, I guess, bring down the elites and bring, the power to the people, and had it in its own DNA, this idea that parliament needed to be slightly stripped of its privilege to a certain extent. Now, the results, or at least the exit polls, are starting to come in. And predictably, yes is looking like it's going to have a big advantage. The exit polls at the moment are putting the yes at about 65.6%. So now this means that the people of Italy have agreed to the cutting down the numbers of MPs and or of members of parliament in chamber and senate. Why does it matter? Because, of course, like many referendums around the world, it has become a politicised issue, where the Movement 5 Stars, that is currently in a coalition at government, is backing this. And it's kind of dragged the PD, which is the centre-left party also in government, into backing the measure as well, because otherwise it would have made it look elitist if they didn't want to agree with with cutting down the numbers of MPs. But it's a constitutional question that's got to do with the power of representation and how really fundamentally effective that the savings of money would be if this was happening. If the win isn't very strong, if the win isn't by a very large margin, which at the moment it looks like it will, it could put the current coalition in danger. If no was to win, which right now looks very unlikely, it would put the current coalition in danger because obviously it would go against what they had advocated. But the base, the centre-left base behind these parties is still quite unhappy and wanted for a no to win. So, and also you've got to consider that right now, other than the constitutional referendum, what's going on in Italy is also regional elections, where the right wing is looking like it's making quite a lot of progress, even in traditionally left-wing regions. So it's still going to be difficult for the current coalition to look at the results from today if the right wing does make the advances that it looks like right now with the exit polls it's making, and be perfectly comfortable and confident in its current position.
Chiara, thank you for that very insightful explainer. This is, of course, a story that we're following here on Monocle 24. Do tune into the briefing and the Globalist throughout the week to find out more about the local elections in Italy and the result of the constitutional referendum. But for now, let's move on to the United States. The country is mourning the loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court justice who died on Friday. She was a monumental figure who was widely admired, and her death has set up a deeply polarized battle to replace her. Well, earlier, Monocle's Ed Stalker described the political battle over nominating a successor as dirty, describing how Republicans are backtracking on rules of play they set for themselves under President Barack Obama.
I was there in 2016 when Antonin Scalia, he was a sort of constitutional originist, they called him. He was this very conservative judge who died back then in February of 2016. Barack Obama at the time in power nominated a moderate called Merrick Garland to fill that seat. Remember, February to November, that's many months before the election. It was completely blocked by Republicans. They wouldn't even allow for Merrick Garland to have a hearing in the Senate. And the reason it's getting dirty and the reason there's going to be such an epic fight is that now Republicans are racing towards nominating. They're not following the rules they set themselves.
Monocle's Ed Stalker there. Marcus, let me come to you first. Are you surprised at all by this U-turn by the Republicans that Ed was just describing?
I would like to say that I am surprised, but actually I'm not. Looking at the atmosphere in the US now, looking at the atmosphere in Washington and how it's got so incredibly toxic and divided over the course of the past 4 years. I think it's very sad. I can't but agree with Ed Stalker what he said about that this whole thing is getting very dirty in the US. And I think it's also a sign of how Donald Trump has actually changed the Republican Party. You know, let's remember that before Trump, Republicans used to talk a lot about values and character and principles and preserving institutions and traditions. And all of a sudden, it looks like they've thrown all these principles away. And that is, I think it's something that Donald Trump has very much done to the party. And I think it just makes me very sad to look at what's happening in the US and what kind of a shit show this is going to become.
So you're saying they basically have put a person over party?
In a way, so yes, in a way. Like, you know, it's become a Trump party. And I feel like this is one example of how that is indeed happening.
Well, we all know from, you know, observing other countries around the world, the danger of having the cult of personality like that. But that is a conversation for another time. Chiara, President Trump has said today that he would probably try to name his nominee by the end of this week, Friday or Saturday, and has also hinted that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dying wish, that was for her, that she said she wanted to be replaced by when the new president had been elected. Trump has hinted that he doubted that was actually her dying wish and that was written by the Democrats instead. Now, on average, confirmation proceedings for a Supreme Court justice take around 70 days. We are 39 days away from the election. But do you think that his attitude, this rush, could at all impact voters, or are we just so used for it to be on brand for Donald Trump?
Again, a little bit like Marcus, I wish I could say that it would impact voters. In many ways, I think that this is not really going to sway the very polarized electorate that is backing Trump, even when he has made a number of other, you know, quite absurd claims in the past. You know, speaking to a lot of US-based reporters over the last week or so, particularly in swing states, where you would think that their job is to understand what kind of voters are still undecided and what can actually change their mind, you would think that it would be something like policies or, you know, a certain amount of actions by Trump that would be able to sway that. But I think people by now know what Trump is and what Trump represents. And the people who support Trump are on board with what he says and the way that he has handled the pandemic and many other, you know, very strong-headed attitudes to many very different issues. Talking to these reporters, my understanding is that what is going to change the picture in many of these swing states, it has got more to do with who's going to go to vote, what demographics will actually show up, and also the mechanics of how the voting is going to happen. You know, the issue of postal voting is going to be a major determining factor in the elections. So it's quite strange to think, a lot of conversations that I have had with these reporters basically confirm the idea that the vast majority of people have made their mind up already. There aren't that many undecided voters left. And so it's more a case of who can actually be bothered to vote, who's going to actually show up, rather than people who are really going to be changing their mind in this last run-up.
Well, you mentioned there the Postal Service, not only who's going to be bothered to vote, but also who will be able to, because as we've reported here as well, and is everywhere, there's been issues with accessing early voting ballots. We'll come back to the US at the end of the show, but for now let's look to this side of the Atlantic. Now, earlier today here in the UK, we've heard the country's top scientific advisors address the nation to talk about the seriousness of coronavirus and perhaps to fill a gap there left by the government. Well, earlier the Financial Times political editor George Parker told us how mixed messaging had created huge problems for the UK government.
There's been confusion on a number of levels. Over the summer, the country was given the impression that we were basically out of the woods. The government had a scheme where it basically subsidised people to go out and have a meal at half price, up to a certain limit, and people were encouraged to go back into their offices. And I think people thought, phew, well, we're probably over the worst of this. And over the summer, when the government should have been building up its defences for the autumn, it signally failed to do so. And now we have a situation where the test and trace system has become totally overwhelmed by demand, so we don't really know where the virus is spreading anymore. And the government's putting out totally different messages about social interaction, whether it's safe to go out or not. So it's muddled, to say the least, and adding to Boris Johnson's problems.
That was the Financial Times' George Parker there speaking to us earlier on the briefing. Chiara, what do you make of the address that happened this morning where we had the two top scientific advisors addressing the nation rather than, you know, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, as we've grown accustomed to, or even the Health Secretary? It's quite interesting as it kind of shows that politics are being put aside and is merely about data.
I think it's interesting because I think it's not a surprise for me to say that there has been a significant erosion of confidence in terms of Boris Johnson's management of this and in terms of, you know, many of the ministers' management of this. And perhaps if government wants to show a bit of a tougher face, it also, by necessity, needs to show a different face making these kind of different announcements, right? Because it would be much more self-contradictory to have the same people that, you know, had a completely different message just a few weeks ago, flip-flop completely, and then changed their tune quite dramatically in such a short amount of time. I think one of the main points that were made about the UK's early reaction to the pandemic quite a few months ago now was that it was sidelining scientific experts for a long time and that we only saw the politics side of it. And perhaps this is the only way that the messaging can be rectified from the government's point of view, just to pass the parcel to somebody else to deal with.
I don't know how you both felt about the address this morning, but it did feel like it had some sort of gravitas to it that we haven't seen in a while, at least here in this country.
I think it was interesting to see how serious the situation has got so quickly and how they present it, because it was just a few days ago when we all were still in the mindset that now we all have to come to, say, central London and work over here, and we have to get businesses running and we have to get back to business, and, you know, we can't handle another lockdown, and, you know, we just have to move forward. And then all of a sudden, I feel like over the weekend we started getting these messages that, hold on, the situation is looking quite bad all of a sudden and we have to do something, because otherwise we will lose control of it. And I think it's interesting, I'm kind of remembering what it was like, you know, 6 months ago when we were watching television the same way we were today at Midori House, all gathered around television screens. And 6 months ago, I think it's worth remembering that we also watched these scientific experts back in the day, and they were talking about herd immunity. And then all of a sudden, you know, we started realizing that the situation was actually much worse, and we couldn't, you know, go to the direction, for example, Sweden did in the end. And after that, we've seen so many U-turns by the government. And I feel like, you know, we've lost the faith, we've lost the trust in the UK's decision makers. I think it was time to get those scientists back on television, because, you know, I don't think many people actually have the feeling that Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister over here, is the right man to handle this situation. in particular in the light of how difficult it is at the moment to get tested. I can tell from my own experience living in East London that I live quite close to a testing centre, and our local MP went there to see, have a look at what's going on over there, and there were 5 people who went there that day, and I don't even think they all got tested. And people from that area of London have been advised by the NHS to go to Inverness for testing. And just, you know, for those listeners who don't know much about the British geography, Inverness is in Scotland. It's about 415 kilometres away. It's incredible how we got into this situation again. And also, those people who are in charge of the testing programme, for example, are saying that we didn't expect that all of a sudden so many people would want to get tested again all of a sudden. Of course we did. We saw that example from many other European countries. We've seen what's been happening in Spain. Once again, it was absolutely to be expected. And once again, someone failed. Someone made a mistake. And this whole situation wasn't taken seriously enough, early enough.
Well, someone failed and someone is still not taking responsibility for it, which is, you know, one of the great problems at the moment is all this finger pointing and shifting of blame instead of recognizing how things should change. And it's interesting you mentioned there the testing markers, because we've, of course, know about the delays here, but the line that no one was expecting it, we've been hearing for the past few months. So, you know, getting people back in businesses, getting kids back at school, reopening some of the traveling between nations, that this was going to happen.
I know. And it was just 2.5 weeks ago when, for example, Eat Out to Help Out scheme ended. This was the government scheme in the UK to support hospitality businesses. So you got basically £10 off from your dinner if you went to a restaurant. And that was a massive campaign. Not that long time ago.
Yeah, and now they're saying that the numbers increase is because people were eating out and helping out.
So it was
businesses.
Our fault in the end, because we went to those restaurants and we did take the public transport.
Well, maybe we are at fault. That's the thing. No one is taking responsibility. This is, of course, a story we could spend all day discussing, but let's stay with science and separating fact and fiction around coronavirus and a potential vaccine may seem easy enough for some, but definitely not with Donald Trump as president. To that end, Scientific American, a magazine which has been in print for 175 years, has now for the first time ever endorsed the presidential candidate, Joe Biden. Well, Josh Fishman is the senior editor of Scientific American, and he explained the publication's decision.
Rather amazing and remarkable. I don't think that people in the United States have ever seen this before. And what we wanted to do in our editorial is make it clear that this kind of behavior has devastating consequences above and all. It's not just what you think and what you say, it's the actions, or in Trump's case, the inactions. You know, the refusal to step up a national testing program and other things, you know, that has led to death.
Josh Fishman of Scientific American there speaking to us earlier on The Globalist. Marcus, we are now less than 6 weeks away from the presidential election in the United States. In this clip here, Josh was talking about, particularly with coronavirus and how the race has been profoundly shaped by the pandemic. But another instance that he mentioned in this interview earlier today is also climate change and Donald Trump's refusal to act when it comes to climate change. We've been seeing for the past few weeks wildfires across the West Coast. Will science matter when it gets to people voting for a candidate? Because it is quite interesting here to see a publication deciding and endorsing a candidate based on science.
Well, I think I'd like to refer to what Kiara actually said earlier, that it seems that in the US many voters have already decided who they're going to be voting for. I don't think there are many people over there who are trying to figure out whether they should vote for Joe Biden or Donald Trump. And in that light, I just can't imagine that, because I think those people who actually follow science, know about science, they know that there is so much evidence about all these things that it should be quite clear who they should vote for. Looking at the endorsement of the Scientific American, I'm afraid I don't obviously know about the demographics of their followers, but I would imagine that there's not awfully many Trump supporters over there either. So I'd like to say that science can make a difference, but I'm a bit skeptical about the situation, and I believe that those people who have decided decided to vote for Donald Trump don't really care that much about scientific facts.
Chiara, what's your take? Do you think the political endorsement, the presidential endorsement by publications and magazines still holds any power? Can, you know, we just heard Marco's view. Do you think voters can be persuaded from a candidate to another based on an editorial?
Well, I think there is a difference between presidential endorsements and political endorsements. Speaking again to quite a lot of editors of US-based media, the impression I get is that people still rely a lot on publications for down-ballot kind of endorsements because they feel like the publication that they trust has done the work for them. In the case of Biden and Trump, their actions are so public that it is less surprising to find out who they should vote for, and there is a sense that they can make up their own mind if they so wish. I think those endorsements do matter, particularly in the case of specific, very niche publications where the demographics could be a little bit mixed. You know, taking into account, for example, a large proportion of the Republican electorate who may feel Republican by, you know, heritage or history, but may not identify with Trump right now. I think that is a slice of the electorate that is particularly interesting right now. And we're starting to see, you know, big signs across, you know, on the streets saying Republicans for Joe Biden. You know, that's a sight to behold. It's a very interesting thing that's happening right now. I think specific thinkers, specific writers that over the course of the years have made it very clear that they are radically Republican, but still find themselves at odds with Trump right now, for them to be backing Biden right now may give the confidence to Republicans to follow their lead. So in that respect, I think certain journalists, certain columns, certain outlets that perhaps have a Republican background but still decide to endorse Biden could make a difference. So in the case of the Scientific American, if there is part of their readership that is Republican and was going to vote for Trump just, you know, out of commitment to the party, perhaps this could have an effect on a very specific slice of the readership.
Well, it goes back to what Marcus was saying earlier on the program about how, you know, the Republican Party has moved beyond being a Republican Party and its core values and kind of this cult of Trump. Chiara and Marcus, thank you both very much for joining us. But I'm afraid that's all we have time on today's late edition. A big thank you to Chiara Ramella and Marcus Hippie and to our studio manager, Sam Empey. I'm Carlotta Ribello here in London. Goodbye, and thanks for being with us.